Today on Vox Talks Economics, the consequences of banking without branches. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. And every week we bring you the best new research in economics. Remember, subscribe and follow us. Follow us on Instagram as well at Vox Talks Economics. One day in the future, we will tell our children, you see that building over there? It used to be a bank. There used to be branches of banks on every high street. And of course, they won't believe us. Bank branches are closing rapidly as banking activity migrates online. So what are the consequences either for the bank's customers or for the wider economy? Niklas Amberg of Sveriges Riksbank and Bo Becker of the Stockholm School of Economics are the authors of a new discussion paper that analyses the effect of bank closures in Sweden. And they join me now. Niklas, hello. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, Tim. Thank you very much.
And Bo, welcome as well.
Thank you.
Bo, in high-income countries where banking's fairly well developed, how quickly are people switching to internet banking at the moment? How quickly are bank branches closing?
Those are obviously two related topics, as you imply. So retail customers in developing economies, as well as developed economies, increasingly use their phones to access banking services. Alternatively, maybe use their computers, maybe use some kind of telephone contact. But basically, people use their phones. They do payment of bills, transfers of money, and they can do a lot of investment on their phones, asset allocation, transfers. In some cases, they can do more complicated things like getting a mortgage, renewing a mortgage, maybe even renegotiating a mortgage. And of course, one thing that bank branches used to do was managing cash and a lot of payments, again, both in developed economies and in emerging economies, is moving to phones and cards and other digital forms. And so that's all stuff that was happening in a bank branch 20, 30 years ago, and it's no longer there. So on the retail side, households, individuals, there's a massive global wave of moving away from in-person delivery, which you do in a branch, to digital delivery of financial services. We're interested in companies, especially SMEs, small and medium-sized enterprises. And for those, there has not been the same movement to online. More things are happening online, but not everything. So the understanding we have of why bank branches are closing is that it is predominantly driven by the disappearance of foot traffic from retail and household customers. And that's also how banks tend to describe it.
In Sweden, that's our setting today. How quickly is this process happening compared to other countries?
About two-thirds of the branches have been closed in the last, let's say, 20 years. That is not the fastest. Smaller, more densely populated countries like Denmark and the Netherlands have seen the fastest reduction in the number of branches. Sweden is large. Some of the population lives in low-density areas, especially in the north. And there, probably the equilibrium number of branches per capita will be a little bit higher. So Sweden is actually fairly typical for Northern European countries. And there are countries in Southern Europe as well that have seen this scale of reduction. Although some big economies in the OECD, like the US, are lagging behind or haven't seen the same reduction yet. They maybe 15% of the branches in the US are closed at this point compared to the peak.
If we ask the banks why they're doing this, what the upside is for them, what would they tell us?
I think they're a little bit shy, but I think it's pretty obvious that this is cost reduction.
Yeah.
A, you need less staff, and B, you save on rent. This is expensive rent. A typical bank branch location would be a high rent retail location.
Yeah.
So that's why they save from closing branches. They, at the same time, have higher costs for developing apps and providing tech support. Those costs are there regardless. So I think it's a huge saving when you close a branch in terms of cost. And I think it's an interesting question what the long-term effects are of this big productivity boost to the financial system. But they're doing it to save money for sure.
What might be the risk for them, though? What bad things might occur from closing these branches?
I'm not so worried about the banks. They can take care of themselves. I'm worried about some groups in society. Number one, and most obviously, once digital banking moves to smartphones, anyone who does not have a smartphone is in a difficult spot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a big and rising issue. What if you're not digitally plugged in enough to consume services that are primarily distributed through apps? There's also a fraud concern, which I've seen quite a bit of popular press coverage of. These digital services require help sometimes for older households, households with language challenges, and that help opens up an avenue for fraud. So there are those concerns. And then for us, the effect on small business lending, we think, is a potential downside to this development. That said, I think it's worth emphasizing that for the vast majority of customers, retail customers, but probably also many companies, the digital bank is easier to interact with and can do more cheaper and faster all times of day with much less movement around town to meet people. So I think it's good for a lot of customers, but there are some groups that may suffer.
In March 2024, Stephen Ongena and Anna Pestova joined us to discuss how banks are responding to the increasing risks from war, disease, and natural disasters, and what that means for their customers. Listen to the episode called Disasters and Bank Financing.
So, Nicholas, as Bo was saying, our research today is about the impact of bank closures on small, medium businesses. You've done this research in Sweden. What are the advantages of doing it in Sweden?
Before I answer that question, Tim, let me just clarify that since I work for a central bank, I need to clarify that whatever I say today are my own views and should not be interpreted as reflecting the views of the Riksbank.
Okay.
Now, what are the advantages of doing this type of research in Sweden? I think there are several advantages. Let me highlight two important ones. The first is very simple and relates to what we've just talked about, namely that the shift towards branchless banking has already come a long way in Sweden. And this long period with many branch closures is what really enables us to trace out the effects of large-scale branch closures on firms and the broader economy. So Sweden is a good laboratory in this sense. The second advantage that I want to highlight is that we have access to very good microdata on firms in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
So unlike in the US, for example, we have detailed information even about the very smallest firms in the economy. And that's critical when you study the effects of branch closures, because we think that local bank branches are particularly important for small firms' access to credit. So if your data doesn't cover small firms, you're going to miss a lot of the important action.
And which period are you studying here? How far back do you go? How much has banking changed over this period?
Yeah, so we study the period 2001 to 2023. This is quite a long period during which the banking sector, of course, has undergone a lot of change. And the BOE talked about this already quite a bit. I mean, a lot of this change has been driven by the dramatic improvements in information technology that we've seen in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
And the changes that are most important for what we're studying is, of course, the rapid shift towards digital distribution of banking services and the concurrent disappearance of traditional brick and mortar branches.
As you say, you've got great data, the advantage of having lots of detail in your data. So what impacts on firms are you analyzing?
What we're interested in is how branch closures affect firms' access to credit, and then through that, their real economic activity. And by real economic activity, I mean things like their sales, employment, mm-hmm. investment, mm-hmm. and survival chances. So we examine both financial and real effect of branch closures.
Looking over this period, though, there are enormous economic changes, technology changes, changes in the finance system. How can you make that causal connection from one thing, bank closures, to all of these impacts that you're trying to study?
Yeah, it is indeed very challenging to pin down the causal effects of branch closures on firms, as you say, Tim, because it's, of course, not random when and where banks close branches. So what we do to tackle this is to rely on a so-called Bartik instrument, also known as a shift share instrument.
Uh-huh.
And the idea with our Bartik instrument is to combine two sources of variation. The first is that the market shares of the Swedish banks differ across municipalities. So take the bank Nordea, for example. Nordea might have a dominant position in municipality A while not being present at all in municipality B. If so, municipality A will be heavily exposed towards Nordea's overall branch policy, while mm-hmm. municipality B won't be exposed at all. So that's the first part. The second part is that a lot of the branch closures that we've seen in Sweden during our sample period have been due to what we call nationwide closure waves. So at different times, the different Swedish banks have taken central strategic decisions to shrink their branch networks. And when they've done that, they've typically closed lots of their branches in very short periods of time. The idea is that municipalities with lots of Nordea branches are likely to have seen lots of branch closures when Nordea was undertaking their large-scale nationwide branch closures, whereas municipalities with lots of, say, Handelsbanken branches are likely to have seen lots of closures when Handelsbanken was in the process of closing branches across the country. Mm-hmm. And our argument is kind of that these nationwide closure waves were undertaken for strategic business reasons and not because of recent developments in specific locations. So by relying on branch closures that were driven by these nationwide closure waves in our analysis, we think we're able to isolate the causal effects of branch closures.
So using this method, what did you find out was the effect of bank closures on its credit for SMEs that you're particularly studying? Were particular some types of SMEs affected more than others?
Yes, we find that in general, firms' access to credit worsens significantly when banks close their local branches.
Right.
So our baseline estimate is that if you close 30% of the bank branches in a municipality, then loans to local firms decline by 6% on average. And a large part of this decline occurs because some firms lose access to bank loans altogether following branch closures. But as you say, all firms aren't affected equally. So branch closures do not reduce the amount of credit going to large firms, mm-hmm. to low-risk firms, or to firms that possess a lot of good collateral. So instead, the firms that do suffer from branch closures are, in particular, small firms, riskier firms, and collateral-poor firms. And this has important implications kind of for how we should think about the effects of branch closures. So just to take one example, a large commercial real estate firm really doesn't have to worry at all about the disappearance of bank branches. But a small firm in the services sector that wants to get a loan to be able to hire more people is going to find that much more harder to do when there are no local bank branches around.
You have these small entrepreneurial firms, it sounds like, very important for the economy. They've lost out on credit. How are they making up for those losses? Do you know that?
Well, the short answer is that firms weren't able to replace the lost credit with funding from other sources. So basically, they couldn't replace the lost bank loans with credit from other actors, like fintechs or non-bank lenders. They also couldn't replace it by issuing new equity. What they could do, and did do to some extent, was to start paying their suppliers later. One way of improving their own liquidity when they had worse access to bank loans was to pay later and thereby kind of draw on their suppliers. But that only made up for a very small portion of the lost bank loans.
I think it's worth pointing out that this is not necessarily always going to be like this. The ability of other lenders, say fintech firms or new banks, to substitute for missing credit may increase over time. People talk about big tech lenders, for example, like Amazon lending to firms that sell through Amazon, or big payment providers that can lend. So there might be groups of firms who already have good alternative sources, and there might be even better alternatives down the road. I think that's worth keeping in mind when we think about the external validity, if you like. So how much this applies to future experiences with branch closures.
Because what we're talking about here is a reduction in face-to-face contact, which is a process built in to the lending that traditional banks do, but maybe their replacement, newer financial firms, do not have processes that have ever relied on face-to-face contact as a way of allocating credit.
That's right.
So that's the impact on credit provision, which sounds significant. Can we estimate an impact on the wider economic activity of these firms, the consequences of having less credit?
We can. So we study the real effects of these branch closures. And what we find is that local firms that are reliant on bank loans for financing experience a significant contraction in the real activity following branch closures. So we see large reductions in their sales, in their employment, and in their working capital investments. We also see that the risk that they exit the market altogether increases significantly after branch closures.
And if these firms, they're having a bad time and there's a significant risk that they exit the market as well, it strikes me there might be spillover effects to other firms that they're doing business with. Did you find that?
That is the case. Because what happens is that when these local firms start laying off people, mm-hmm. of course, those people lose their incomes and they will consume less. That risks harming other local firms that are dependent on local demand. What we find is that even firms that are not themselves reliant on banks for funding experience a contraction in their sales after branch closures. Because the lower local demand that results from people being laid off from the directly affected firms reduce demand in the region, which also harms firms that do not rely on banks for funding themselves.
You pointed out that while Sweden's had a lot of branch closures, it's not the place where branch closures have been the fastest, even in Europe. Does your research suggest that these effects that you are seeing, which seem to be economically very important, would be replicated over other countries that are having branch closures at least this rate?
Yeah, we think there are good reasons to think that this would happen in other countries as well. In countries where this is happening gradually, of course, there might be time for other actors to step in and partly replace the role that banks have fulfilled in the past. But we see no reason to think that this wouldn't happen in other countries as well that go through the process of shrinking their bank branch networks.
I guess there is an incentive now for other actors in the financial services sector to be able to step in, because it seems from what you're saying that there are credit-worthy firms that are not getting credit because of this change in the market.
One way to think about this is to say that retail banking, which necessitated massive branch networks in the era of cash and face-to-face delivery, subsidized corporate lending. Because you had that network everywhere, you had an easy way to be plugged into local communities everywhere, mm-hmm. and you didn't really have to pay for it entirely because you shared the cost with the retail bank business. And I think this may be an underappreciated reason that retail banking and corporate banking go together so often, mm-hmm. but that's now disappearing. And so corporate credit provision has to stand on its own. It doesn't benefit anymore from this implicit subsidy or cost-sharing arrangement that's centuries old. It's over. So very possible that technology can help replace some of that soft information collection that branches were involved with, knowing the local reputations, for example, of entrepreneurs. That's not going to be there, but maybe there's some big data that can replace. Those new machine learning, AI, big data models, they might be deployed by large existing banks or new firms. Presumably great opportunities out there for corporate credit provision in other ways.
Well, there must be thousands of firms all over Europe and North America and other places as well that would be hoping that that does happen and they do step in. We'll see what happens. But for now, Nicholas, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
And Bo as well.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper is Discussion Paper 19450 at CEPR. If you want to get hold of it that way, it is called Banking Without Branches, and the authors just heard from them, Nicholas Amberg and Bo Becker.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. If you follow and subscribe to Vox Talks wherever you get your podcasts, you can listen to any of our previous episodes whenever and wherever you want. Though not so often in the queue at the bank, it seems. If you've been enjoying what we do, please leave us a review. Next week on Vox Talks, on International Men's Day, we investigate masculinity.